Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Here's your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, one of America's leading experts in foster care.
And welcome to the program this week, this June 8, 2015, to Foster Talk with Dr. John. You are listening to America's foster care radio program. That's right, Radio for Foster Care on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This week, we are calling in from the Orlando, Florida studios. In fact, I have brought my family here to Disney World once again as we say goodbye to my oldest daughter for a year in Australia. Emma and my wife and I are working on a program where we are going to try to bring foster children, children in foster care, to Disney World for a week of magic, for a week of escape, for a week of trauma-less joy. In fact, you can read all about that in my article, Disney Therapy. But I'm so glad you joined us this week on the program. I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, foster parent, adoptive parent, biological parent, and overall trying to be a good guy. And so this week we've got a huge show filled for you. I'm so glad, so excited that you joined us. We have a special guest this week, Ashley Rhodes Corder. Are you familiar with the book Three Little Words? Well, we have her, the author, on later on in the program. She's going to tell us about, wow, what a journey she has been in and some of the things she's got going on in her life. What an inspirational story she has. And she's going to share us that story in about 10 minutes from now. Also coming up, as we do every single week, the National Foster Parent Association, the NFPA News and Notes segment. We have our foster care question of the week. And wow, what a response we got this week. This week's question is, why might you say no to a placement of a child into your home and into your family? That is this week's question. You can find that question, as you can every single Monday morning, on my Facebook page, Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. And if you want, you can go there right now. Don't turn the radio off. Just keep listening to it. Go over to Facebook. Check out that page. Put in your response, and maybe we will read your response later on in the program. Also, our Foster Care Hero of the Week. Your calls, all that, and a whole lot more. In fact, the phone number for you to call in, 347-324-5140. Once again, 347-324-5140. You know, we're creeping a little bit closer to that weekend in June in the state of Virginia for the National Foster Parent Association's 2015 conference. And if you're attending, well, guess what? I'll be there as well. I'll be doing some seminars there. One of the seminars I'll be doing is one of my brand new ones for 2015, Marriage and Foster Parenting, Making It Work. I hope to see you there. If you do attend, make sure you stop by my resource and book table. I'd love to visit with you and love to chat with you. Okay, let us go to a very, very busy news desk, shall we? And first of all, we go to the country all the way over to India, where for the first time, the concept of foster care will get to see the light of day in the country of India. The Union Ministry of Women and Child Development, the WCD, circulated the first ever guidelines to the state governments following a national consultation last week, June the 3rd. Children whose one or both parents are in jail or unable to take care of their wards due to a terminal illness can now be taken up for the foster care system. The guideline, accessed by a newspaper in India, reported last week, once the biological parents are out of jail, according to the report, the child has to be restored back to them if they so demand. In the existing system in India, only children in orphanages are up for adoption. The process of adopting children in India while their biological parents are alive is usually very complicated. As per the guidelines in India, a foster child does not have legal rights on property or of the parent or family where they are placed. The system, prevalent in most developed countries of the world, is an arrangement wherein abandoned and surrendered children are placed with families unrelated to them while awaiting adoption. Now, the foster care system was introduced in India for the first time in 2014. Now, this has been part of the schemes of the WCD minister, Maneka Gandhi, who would propose a scheme soon after taking over in May of last year. As per the guidelines, only Indian couples are eligible to take children under their care. And as soon as a child finds an adoptive home, they have to give up the children. There will also be provision for a group foster children in which a family can take care of multiple children in need of care and protection, which are without parental care. You can find the full report on my Facebook page, but an interesting report there coming out of the country of India. They do things a little bit differently there, don't they? Okay, we jump over to the state of California, where a California Senate bill aimed at boosting benefits to foster youth involved with the juvenile justice system was amended last Tuesday to ensure that those youth who were in secure confinement on their 18th birthday would not be stripped of extended foster care benefits. We see this happening in a lot of states across the U.S. Now, last year, a story was published about the divergent paths of two San Diego brothers in the foster care system. And as a result of that report, many in California took notice and laws are being changed. Earlier this year, California Senator Jim Beal, a Democrat of San Jose, introduced House Bill SB 12, a bill inspired by the brothers' story that would allow foster youth confined on their 18th birthday to receive benefits, as well as other foster youth involved in the probation system from 18 to 21. After clearing the Senate Judiciary Committee in April this year, SB 12 was amended last Tuesday to focus on closing a loophole that has denied extended benefits to foster youth. However, language that would more broadly guarantee benefits to all crossover youth who are detained and released to someone other than a parent before the age of 18 has been stripped away. The bill will come up for a vote in the California Senate in the coming weeks that can send it to the Assembly for consideration, and we will keep you updated when we hear from that bill. Okay, we go to Pennsylvania, where despite the best efforts, foster care can still be a traumatic experience for a child who's already confronted issues many adults cannot handle, a recent report revealed. Now, last year in Pennsylvania, 24% more children, 24% more, were placed in kinship foster care homes compared to 2012. Now, kinship care could be everything from a blood relative to a coach to a family friend or a teacher. Generally, it is a biological family member. We've talked about it here in the program many times. Pennsylvania State Supreme Court Justice Max Baer says research shows trauma is reduced for children who go into a kinship home instead of a group setting or other random options. Now, Sandy Moore, administrator of the Office of Children and Families in Pennsylvania, says that's not to say that those options aren't good. That's not the issue, she says. The issue is where a child is going to feel more comfortable and safest and with known people. It's just sort of a no-brainer, she says. Moore says kinship care can help restore the physical and emotional well-being for a child. Interesting report there from California. Now we go to the Great White North, British Columbia, up in the country of Canada, where a momentum to help vulnerable youth aging out of foster care continues to grow in British Columbia with the recent announcement of two new programs. This past Monday, last week, the provincial government launched a new website, agedout.com, to help teens in foster care prepare for their 19th birthdays when they lose all the support in Canada, such as foster parents, social workers, and financial assistance upon which they had come to rely. The website, designed by former foster youth in care, gives advice on how to navigate life on their own, such as finishing high school and accessing government bursary programs, medical issues ranging from sexually transmitted diseases to depression, avoiding homelessness and tenant rights, getting a social insurance card or a driver's license, accessing employment services or going on welfare, leaving abusive relationships, and finding community drop-in programs. Wow, what a great, great website. So if you're here in the U.S. or overseas, check out that website, agedout.com. Now, indeed, it does refer specifically to Canada, but I have no doubt that you can find some interesting information on there that can that you can help with. Now, as we've talked about it here many, many times in the program, children that age out in foster care in the United States generally have a very, very difficult road ahead of them. We've talked about it here numerous times. 55% will drop out of high school. 65% will end up homeless. 75% up in jail. So many just face such difficult hardships. In fact, our special guest coming up in a few moments, she beat those odds. Only 2% will graduate with a four-year college degree. And our special guest, Ashley Rhodes Corder, has beaten those odds, and she's got a remarkable story. She's going to tell us about that in a few moments. Okay, now let's go to our foster care hero of the week. And this week, our hero is a little bit different. It's a 13-year-old girl in foster care, and it's more of an inspirational story. It's about Jeremiah Tillman. Now, it took more than a decade in foster care before Jeremiah Tillman found a place she hopes she can call a home forever. The 13-year-old was placed in his day custody when she was 2 years of age, and she spent the next 5 years shuffling to at least 10 different foster homes. The past 6 years have been the most stable of her life, all spent with the same family. But even within the walls of her home, she had instability and crushing disappointment clawing into her life. She was almost adopted once in 2012 and again in 2014. She moved in with families who intended to make her theirs. Both times, though, the families gave her back. Gave her back. And, you know, if you read my book, Fostering Love, you know that I've experienced that myself as well with a child coming to our house at 17 years of age. In fact, she had three families adopt her and give her back. So that's just crushing. But good news, though, for Jeremiah Tillman. She has now found a forever family. She is now going to be adopted by a family. Christine and Kevin Selzin have agreed to adopt young Jeremiah Tillman. So, this week, our hats go off to young Jeremiah Tillman, 13-year-old girl who has endured so much, yet has finally found her forever family. And for that, we salute her as our foster care hero of the week. Okay, we got to take a commercial break. But when we come back, we have our NFPA news and notes. We'll have our foster parenting manual tip of the week, the foster care question of the week, and our special guest, Ashley Rhodes Corder. You are listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program. Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Greetings. My name is Daniel Heimpel, and I'm the publisher of The Chronicle of Social Change, an online news site covering child welfare and juvenile justice. Be sure to check out our money and business section, which includes a huge database of youth services funding opportunities from private foundations and all levels of government. Thanks for taking a look at chronicleofsocialchange.org.
Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com. Now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And welcome back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network on this Monday, June 8, 2015, calling in from Orlando, Florida. In fact, we have as our special guest, also from the state of Florida, Ashley Rhodes Corder. Now, Ashley has a remarkable story. She is a former foster child herself. In fact, she has beaten the odds. You may have heard about her from her great book, Three Little Words, a bestseller and an inspirational book that is sure to really inspire you. Ashley has a master's degree. She is a registered foster parent, and she is an inspirational speaker that travels the nation. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us this week in the program.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited.
Now, Ashley, you, as I said earlier, you have a remarkable story. You have done so much where you're just a tremendous inspiration to others. But before we get into what you're doing now, Ashley, and before we get into your book, Three Little Words, you spent time in the foster care system yourself. Ashley, can you tell us a little bit about that time?
Sure. Well, I entered foster care when I was about 3 years old. My mother was a single teenage mother who had grown up in foster care herself. So, it was a cycle of abuse. She didn't have the resources or the support to really know how to be a parent. And so, as the cycle tells us, my brother and I ended up in foster care. And I spent the next 10 years bouncing around to 14 different foster homes. And I lived in two group homes. And I later learned that a quarter of my families were or became convicted felons. So,
wow.
Needless to say, I really didn't have the best experiences oftentimes in my foster homes. Many of them were extremely overcrowded. Some were horrifically abusive. My brother was almost killed in one home. So it was sort of this kind of crazy upbringing. And then when I was 12 years old, I was adopted from a children's home by an amazing couple. And even though we had tons of ups and downs, in fact, there's
right.
an entire chapter in my book entitled Testing, Testing, where I
right.
pushed every button these people had, I'm still amazingly close with my adoptive family, and I've been able to have this life that I never would have imagined possible. And so I guess people would say that I had that kind of happily ever after, but it really took a lot of time and a lot of people to take an interest and take a chance on a kid like me. And that's why I now spend my adult life kind of giving back to helping the very system that I grew up in. And I went on to become a foster parent. We have an adopted son. I'm married with three children, and I'm still amazingly close with my adoptive parents, as well as my guardian ad litem, CASA volunteer, who was really instrumental in getting me out of some abusive situations and helping to find me that adoptive family. So I really feel like my life now is one of service and trying to use my story to help improve the system, but also encourage other people who are either growing up in care themselves or the caseworkers and the teachers and the people who are working in child welfare. Because I can tell you, I've never met anyone who works with foster children that says, well, obviously I do it for that fat paycheck. So,
oh, my goodness gracious. Absolutely right.
Yeah, so these are such thankless jobs, and I think it really helps to have someone to say that thank you and really try to encourage professionals to stick with it and community members to volunteer their time, because these kids just desperately need us more than ever.
Ashley, I often tell people when I speak, like you, I travel the country speaking, and I often tell my audience that foster parenting for me is the hardest thing I've ever done, yet at the same time, mm-hmm. it's the most important thing I've ever done, and I couldn't imagine doing nothing but it, And I say it's so difficult because, you have children coming to your homes, and as a foster parent, I grieve when these children leave my home. My heart is broken. It's like losing my own child because I come to love them unconditionally. You have seen both sides of that, Ashley. You have been in the situation where you have been a child placed into a home of strangers, and you are a foster parent yourself. Do you think your experience as a child in place in homes has given you a different insight as a foster parent?
Well, my experience as a foster parent has been unbelievable. And admittedly, that's sort of the focus of the second half of my new book, Three More Words, that's coming out this month. And I talk about what it's like to be a mother now that I was a foster child and now I'm a foster mother. I mean, it's sort of crazy that my life has taken that turn. And when I look at these kids, I feel like I do have a really unique understanding of how they're feeling and what they're experiencing, especially when we were fostering older children. And I so frequently saw their experiences through my own, and I had to relive a lot of my trauma. But I think it was because of my experiences I was able to to empathize with them on a really unique level. And I think it helped them to know that someone like me did grow up in care, because these kids come from really abusive situations. And I think it helps them to know that you can experience adversity but still come out normal and productive and successful. So I was really able to connect in a special way with a lot of these kids. And my husband and I have fostered over 20 children, and we were foster parents until very recently, when we experienced an unbelievable tragedy where one of our foster children was returned to relatives that they had been removed from, and she was a 9-year-old little girl and was murdered by one of the relatives in the home. So it was sort of one of our worst fostering fears come true. Pardon?
I'm right there with you. I understand completely. I understand.
Yeah. So, I mean, fostering has been the most unbelievable roller coaster for us. But it's exactly what you said. Even though we were so frustrated dealing with the bureaucracy and the red tape, and, you know, and I'm sure you can relate as professionals, particularly in the system, you're banging your head against the wall, so very clearly seeing what calls should be made, but you're sort of powerless to do anything. But at the end of the day, you have to do it for the kids. These kids, they don't understand bureaucracy. They don't understand anything but a warm bed and a belly full of healthy foods and a kind smile and a warm hug and even the smallest bit of stability. That's what kids understand. And so people are like, well, I could never foster because I would love them too much and then I would be heartbroken when they left.
Yes.
But, you know, we have friends that say these kids deserve to have someone who cries when they leave, who cares about them that much. And at the end of the day, we're the adults in the situation. So when we're able to use our skills to rehabilitate a biological family member or a parent and strengthen their kinship unit, that's amazing. And that's going to be the best outcome for these kids. But it is devastating to see kids go back to unsafe situations. But the one thing I can say is even when that happened, it wasn't but an hour and our phone was ringing again to help another child.
I understand.
The need is so overwhelming. So even though we've experienced just shocking situations as foster parents, there's going to be another kid out there that desperately needs your help. I mean, things are, though so many laws and legislation and policies have changed since I was a child in foster care, people are so quick to say, oh, your story was so many years ago. You were adopted in 98. I mean, oh, you're 29 now. Your story is ancient. Well, the kids in our foster home, they prove to us that things are just as bad as they used to be in so many respects. And they kids need us now more than ever, even when I was a foster child. I mean, even in Florida alone, there have been over 200 deaths this year.
Yes, I'm
this
familiar
year.
With that.
I mean, we're talking life or death situations, which
is
why I spend so much time trying to encourage people to become volunteer or guardian ad litem and CASAs and become foster parents, become adopted parents, because the need is just so tremendous.
You know, you touched on something that's interesting there, that your friends say the same thing that I hear across the U.S. all the time. I couldn't do it because my heart would break too much. I would love the children too much. But that's exactly what should happen to foster parents. Our hearts should break because we should love these children so unconditionally. We should love them just like they are our own children, because they are our own children, that when they do leave, it's as if our own child is leaving. And when our heart breaks, that means we have given them not only stability they need and not only the security they need, but we have given them all of our love. And for some children to care, that might be the first time an adult has ever loved them in a positive and a safe fashion. So that's so very true. Now,
you nailed it. I mean, these kids have never known that kind of unconditional love sometimes. So it's so powerful.
Right. And sadly, sometimes when these children go back to a family member, we as foster parents may be the only adult that ever loves them, because they may be going back to a very, very bad situation again, which happens more often than not, sadly. Now, Ashley, we've mentioned this program numerous times, the statistics of children graduating from college with a four-year degree that have been in the foster care system. Only 2% will graduate with a four-year degree. Now, Ashley, you have your master's degree. So what motivated you? What motivated you to embrace education as a road to success?
Yeah, well, admittedly, education and the school system, I mean, I very quickly saw school as a sanctuary for me because, again, I changed homes so many times. I changed schools twice a year until the seventh grade. But
right.
when I was in school, I wasn't beaten and I didn't go hungry. And I had amazing teachers that once they learned I was a foster child, they were sort of shocked. Oh, wow, you know, she's not lighting the building on fire. Like, they were really impressed that someone with my background could be doing so well academically. And so they really encouraged me in so many wonderful ways. And so I learned at a very young age that no matter how horrible my home situation was, my education was really something that I was going to have for the rest of my life. It was something that nobody could control, nobody
right.
could take away, nobody could beat out of me. And so I just got this sense of satisfaction being in the classroom and reading. And that was kind of also my defense mechanism. When I would be bullied by other kids, you know, I could say, oh, well, what did you get on your English essay? You know, that was
sure.
sort of my way of survival. And then So I've always really thrived in an academic setting, and I remember my fourth grade teacher gave me my very first book, which was Anne of Green Gables. So I'm reading this, and I loved theater. That was a great escape for me, so I knew about, you know, Annie, and I'm like, okay, what's with all these orphans with red hair and A names? My name's Ashley, and I have red hair, you know, so... you know, it was just a wonderful escape for me, and I love learning. My undergrad, I studied communications and theater and minored in political science and psychology. I got my master's degree in social work, so I really am just so fascinated by so many facets of academia and social work in particular, anthropology and psychology, and it really helped me get an understanding of my life and the characters that have impacted me both professionally and personally, and it's just been kind of wonderful learning about all of these different fields and then using my personal and professional experiences to help be a mother and be a professional myself and really translate that into something that could really be productive and help the child welfare system particularly, because there's still so much work to be done.
Oh, that's right. So very true. So very true. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. The number to call in, 347-324-5140. Now, Ashley, you talked about the new book, but you have your first book, Three Little Words, is, wow, what a book. What led you to write that book? I understand that it's an interesting journey of actually how it found its way through a publisher. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, I love school. So even when I was young, I had always dreamed of going to college, but I had been adopted so late. So my parents didn't have a college fund set aside. So I knew that it would really be up to me to figure out how I was going to get myself through college. So in high school, I would apply for every writing contest and scholarship and pretty much anything I could get my hands on. And I did an essay contest for the New York Times Magazine, which asked you to write about a day that was really life-changing. And so I wrote a little essay called Three Little Words, where I talked about my adoption day and how it wasn't this rainbows and sunshine, happy kind of occasion. It was horrifying for me because I had so many disappointments and I really didn't believe in happily ever after. So I wrote this little essay and I happened to win first place, which was incredible. And from that, publishers contacted me interested in hearing the full story. So it was this really amazing opportunity that kind of fell in my lap when I was 17. And, you know, when you're 17 and you have the opportunity to write a book, you don't say no. That's just crazy
right.
talk.
So, sure.
I spent over 5 years working on it, and when I graduated from college, it was published in 2008, and it's now an international bestseller, which I'm just pinching myself. It's unbelievable. So Three Little Words chronicles my story through foster care. So it's when I'm little, and it goes all the way through my graduation of high school and me going off to college. And a lot of people are sort of perplexed. Well, how can you possibly remember everything? Well, first of all, children tend to remember the worst of your experiences. These
yes.
things get seared
yes.
into your brain, even young children. But also, I had eventually, because of some lawsuits, I had access to my case files, which consisted of over 80,000 documents. So
wow.
I was able to go back, and it was kind of like writing a huge term paper. I was able to recreate so much and find arrest reports and interviews, but I also interviewed former foster parents and biological relatives. And so everything that I write in my book is 100% true. We have it's almost an entire, a separate book of just legal documents that match everything I write about. And foster kids, you know, I grew up being called a liar my entire life. When I would report abuse, I was labeled a liar. And so having an authentic voice and having the truth be told, but also having evidence for the truths that I tell was so important to me. So that was the first book. And then the second book catches readers up to where I am now. So the first half is me going to college and making typical stupid college mistakes and meeting my husband. A lot of people, the same questions I get asked constantly, where's your brother? How's your mother? Are you still in touch with your adoptive parents? So I spend the first half of the book kind of catching readers up to where I am now. And the second half is all about being a foster parent and some of the stories of our kids and the things that we've experienced. And I'm really passionate about the second half of the book. And I think the first half will be interesting for people that want to have some of those questions answered and those who have followed the first book. But the second half, I'm really hoping will be inspirational, but also shocking and really jolt people into action, because the things that are happening in everyday communities right here in the U.S., It's shocking, and I wish that this was more of an homage to fabulous foster parenting and how
sure.
wonderful our system is, but we could only share the story that we experience, and even
right.
with who we are and what we do, we saw just unbelievable things. So that's those two projects in a nutshell.
Now, Ashley, I have an ebook that came out recently on Amazon called Marriage and Foster Parenting, Making It Work. As foster parents, both members of the marriage, both partners, have to be on board in order for the foster parenting and the marriage to work successfully. Did you have to do it any because here you are a former foster child yourself, and so you've gone through it all. How did you bring this conversation up to your husband? Say, hey, this is who I am and this is what I want to do.
Well, interestingly enough, first of all, my husband is the most kind. Well, he grew up in a very traditional family. He's one of four siblings. His parents are still married in a loving marriage. He was born and raised in the same home his parents still live in. You know, one of these. Needless to say, my story was a jolt to the system for him. He had never experienced anything quite like this. And so it was sort of interesting for him to read my book and digest all of this. But as you'll read, I met him actually my senior year of high school, and he grew up in St. Petersburg where I went to college. So he was sort of already a part of my life and got to see some of these chapters unfolding. But when we started the fostering process, we had just been married, and we actually were kickstarted into fostering because of a kinship situation. And so he had a relative that was having some issues, and they had two young children, and they were being cared for by another relative. But I sort of said to him, hey, look, I know the system. We were already really active participants in the case and taking the kids out, and we were very close with the kids. And I said, hey, this would be a really good idea for us to be officially licensed, because that will help in any future situation that might pop up. And in fact, we took the son on a trip to Daytona with us and had all this crazy issues with the caseworker who was late on her visit. She called the cops on us for taking the kid out of county. I mean, it was nuts,
sure.
even though at
yep.
that time we were cleared. My husband and I were guardian of items at the time. So obviously
right.
we had permission. We went through all the right things. But I was like, look, if we're licensed foster parents, that's really going to help. So we started going through the foster classes, and immediately we learned that in our particular area, there was this huge influx of children under five, particularly babies, because in Florida where we live, we're at the height of the pill mill situation. We're like the pill mill capital of the country, where there's a huge prescription drug problem in our area. So they had babies lined up in the office, like,
wow.
you know, in group homes, just lined up because there just aren't enough homes. So
right.
immediately we were like, well, you know, here we are, a young married couple. We're like, well, golly, you know, that's something we could do. We could watch these babies. We could help out. And sure enough, I mean, before we even knew that our license had officially gone through, we got a call to take our first child. I mean, the need is just so incredible. And then 5 years later, here we are. I mean, we never really expected to be fostering full time. But once you get involved and once you see the need, you just can't turn your back away. And I love the question that you have this week, because It really speaks to how we operated our foster home. There is a child and a profile out there for almost every family. And
yes.
We, at that time, specialized in younger children.
Right.
And so we had to say no, and that was okay, because we had as many as 4 children at one time eventually. But if we stuck to our profile and we really were honest about our strengths and our weaknesses and our family dynamic, we were really able to successfully have 4 children at one time. But we noticed that when we strayed from our profile, or we got talked into a child that wasn't kind of within our profile, then it really wasn't as positive of an experience. So I really think it's fabulous when parents are able to say no, because if you say no to one, I guarantee you the phone is going to ring an hour later with a child that is perfect for your family dynamic. And there are single children, there are huge sibling groups, there are infants, there are teenagers, there are children of every age, every race, every academic ability. It's really remarkable the amount of children that are available. And so you were never without.
Couldn't agree with you more. My wife and I have been doing it for 13 years, and we've had as many as 11 children in our house at one time. And,
wow.
And we've had to say no at times. And I tell foster parents, you know, not every single child is going to be the best placement for your home. We as human beings, we are not perfect fits for every single person. There are some children we have strengths for, and there are other families that can take care of the child in a better fashion because of whatever circumstance it might be. So, yeah, the no is a hard word to say sometimes, but it is an important word to say. Otherwise, your family and the child could be damaged. So, I agree. Actually,
exactly.
Before we go, tell us how we can find your books and how people can contact you and find out more about you.
Absolutely. Well, my website is rhodes-corner.com, rhodes-corter, and I can be reached by email, social media. My books are 3 Little Words and 3 More Words, which are available on Amazon and in bookstores all over the place. So I really hope that my story is, again, a call to action, and that people use these as learning tools and opportunities to see a different side of our society that not a lot of people get a glimpse into, or those of you who are involved in child welfare already, that you're somewhat encouraged by this, because it takes only one person to save the life of a child. And I think that's a really important message, because I was saved by a few individuals, and I have an amazing life because of the tenacity and determination they had to make me succeed.
And now you're changing lives as well at the same time. So
that's
wonderful.
That's the hope.
You are. Ashley, thank you so much for appearing on the program. Tell your husband, as a foster daddy myself, that my hat's off to him, and I appreciate what he does as well. Thanks for appearing on the show, and best of luck with your future book.
Oh, thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing from all of your listeners.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate it. All right, what a great interview. Make sure you check out her website, rhodescorner.com. You can find more information about it on my Facebook page. I'll have information there tomorrow about it. And check out her books. What some great stories there. Just fantastic. Okay, we got to take a commercial break. We are behind time, but when we come back, we'll be having our foster care question of the week. We got the NFPA news and notes, and we have our foster parenting manual tip of the week as well. You are listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We will be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
Friends, my brand new ebook just came out last week, the first weekend of June. It is Foster Parenting 101, Inspirational Verse and Poems for Foster Parents. Now, as a foster parent myself for 13 years, there have been those days where I've thought, goodness, can I continue to do this? Can I continue to find strength to take care of these children? Some days I'm feeling beaten down myself. So sometimes I have to look for inspiration myself. Foster Parenting 101, Inspirational Verse and Poems for Foster Parents, is an ebook filled with inspirational quotes and poems for today's foster parents, today's social workers, and child advocates. This book is designed to encourage and inspire you, as I have collected some of the most encouraging verses for those who care for children in need. This is one special ebook that you cannot be without. Check it out on Amazon.com. Foster Parenting 101, Inspirational Verse and Poems for Foster Parents, available only on Kindle.
Hi, this is Chris Chmielewski, owner, editor, and creator of Foster Focus Magazine, the only monthly foster care magazine in America. You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo. Enjoy and visit fosterfocusmag.com.
And we are back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. We got a great show lined up for you next week. We are going to be speaking to several of the authors of the brand new book, The Kinship Toolbox. So make sure you tune in next Monday for that. Right now, we have our Foster Parenting Manual Tip of the Week. And this week, we look at how foster parents and birth parents can successfully be co-parents. Now, it can be quite difficult having a foster child in your home. He or she may have been in place in your home because of abuse or neglect from his family. Perhaps he was in danger from birth parents who were abusing themselves. Now, whatever the issue, for his placement into the child's welfare custody, your foster child has most likely come to you with some emotional problems and is struggling with the loss of his family. Remember, he does not want to be in your home. Now, as a foster parent, it is part of your job to help your foster child deal with these issues and help him adjust to his new environment, as well as develop a positive and loving relationship with him. However, there is another part of your role as a foster parent that can be extremely difficult. That is co-parenting. When a foster parent shares the nurturing of a foster child alongside the birth parents and caseworkers, reunification tends to happen at a quicker and a more successful rate. Co-parenting sees you as a foster parent working alongside the biological parents of the child living under your roof and with your family. This may be the most difficult part of your job. Not only will the foster child benefit from this improved relationships, but hopefully, the biological parents will also benefit. They will also benefit, hopefully, as they learn positive parenting skills from the foster parent. Now, there are a number of strategies that will help to reduce the stress that you, as a foster parent, can use when working with birth parents. Now, remember, keep this in mind, this cannot be applied to every single situation. As a foster parent myself of 13 years, there have been those times when birth parents have wanted nothing to do with me. And we often know that foster parents are seen as the bad guy when it comes to biological parents. But if you can help in this co-parenting role, you will help not only the child, but you'll help the parents as well. So here's a few things you can do. First, be a role model. As a role model, as a foster parent, you will be a role model for countless people, as many eyes will be upon you. Not only will you be a role model for your foster children, but for the public as a whole. Foster parenting will be on display for all to see, whether it's from your church members, your work employees, your family, your friends, your neighbors, whoever it may be. You will be on display for all to see as you undertake your role as a foster parent. Perhaps others will be impressed by your role and will wish to become a foster parent, or in the very least, help out. Now, for birth parents and family members, you might be the best example of a good parent. Everything you do as a foster parent will send signals to the biological parents or on how a parent should act, as well as how to treat their own children. When your foster child meets with his birth parents for visitations, he should be well-dressed, clean and healthy, looking his best. His hair should be combed with nails cut. After all, you are sending a message that he is worthy of your best attention. Another thing that you can do, answer questions honestly. upon meeting the birth parents for the first time, there are bound to be questions from both you and the birth parents. Your foster child's family members will want to know what kind of family their child is living with, what his home life will be like, if he is being taken care of, and many other concerns. After all, their child has been taken away from them against their wishes and placed in a strange home, your home. They will have many concerns and may not be as courteous as you like. So be prepared for them. Be prepared for them to be hostile, to be rude, angry, or even distant. Remember, they are hurting themselves and have been through a traumatic experience with the removal of their child. Respectfully encourage them to ask you as many questions as they would like. It is important that you answer their questions as honestly and as openly as possible, treating them with the utmost integrity, kindness, and politeness. Remember, you are modeling good adult behavior to them as well as to your foster child. One more thing you can do, ask about their child. Your foster child's biological parents and family members will know him better than anyone else, and your meeting with him will offer you the opportunity to learn a great deal about him, as well as acquire important information that you might need. A list of prepared questions will help you gather the information you need. So when you ask questions about their child, you are showing the birth parents that you are interested in the child and his well-being. By indicating with your questions that his parents are the experts, you will begin to form a relationship, one that will benefit all involved. You can find out a whole lot more on how to be co-parents in the book, The Foster Parenting Manual. Okay, when we come back, we are going to look at our foster care question of the week. And wow, did we get a response to this one. You're listening to America's Foster Care Radio Program on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. I'm Dr. John DeGarmo. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program.
Welcome to the award-winning Fostering Families Today magazine. Foster parents are called to give their hearts, share their homes, and make a difference in the life of a child. The journey is difficult and filled with heartbreak and loss, but also joys and inspiration as they see the children in their care make small changes or large accomplishments. Fostering Families Today has been ministering to the hearts of those families for 15 years, celebrating the joys, educating for the future, and sharing in the bumps and bruises of the fostering journey. It's more than a magazine. It's a training tool, a therapeutic intervention, and a friend to lean on. Let Fostering Families Today be part of your journey. Find us on the internet at www.adoptinfo.net or call for additional information toll free at 888-924-6736.
An insightful, interesting new book called Fostering Love, available at Amazon or where you buy books. John DeGarmo learns that to follow God's call in his life means to take up his cross in his own home. This book is a true life account of his experience as a foster parent, along with his wife and their own three children, as he followed God's call to take foster children into his home. This is a story of heartbreak, sadness, and ultimate love as he comes to find God in the tears and smiles of many foster children. Fostering Love by Dr. John DeGarmo. And now back to Dr. John DeGarmo with Foster Talk.
And you're back with Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. This is America's Foster Care Radio Program. And now we go to our Foster Care Question of the Week. We do it every single Monday morning on my Facebook page. Just go to Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert, and you will find the question each week. This week's question, why might you say no to a placement of a child into your home and into your family? We have some of those answers right here. Tammy says, history of violence because we have a special needs five-year-old. Elizabeth says, the one time I did was a child I knew off and on for years, and when he was going to be placed, he majorly sabotaged it with a series of breaking into places he had no business in. Jennifer says, we have 4 children, so the history really plays a role into our decision. It just depends on the child's needs and behavior. As much as I would like to save all the children in need, I know my family isn't equipped to try. My kiddos come first. You know, Jennifer, you hit on something very important there. As families, we are not equipped for every single child, and it is important to remember that. Our foster care question of the week, why might you say no to a placement of a child into your home and into your family? Ashley says, already at a mental max with the current kiddos. License say we can have more, but with toddlers only 10 months apart, my sanity says differently. I love it, Ashley. I love it. There have been days when I thought my own sanity was saying no as well. Kelly says, I have too many impressionable kids in my home. I agree. I understand. Susan says, right now I'm only turning down placements due to the fact that we have 4 kids. Each one takes ADHD meds and involved in sports. My hubby and I work full time. If I was able to be home, I would be open to more kids. Lynn says, we have a special needs foster son right now that has a very busy schedule with all of his appointments and therapies. We aren't taking a second case because it would be nearly impossible to add a separate visit schedule into our already busy calendar. Chris says, sexual perpetrators or fire setting history. You know, Chris, I recently had a situation where my wife and I were asked to take in a young teenage girl who had been raped by a family, and she had had an abortion, and she was very promiscuous, and we had to say no. And I said no because my wife, Chris, works during the days. And when I am off on the weeks for vacation sometimes, when I'm at home working, I cannot have this child in there because of the false accusations that could be made about me by this young girl that had had a history of sexual experiences. Without my wife being present there, I was placing myself and thus my family into a dangerous situation where false accusations could be made. So sometimes that is necessary. Nicole says, sexual behavior, fire setting, and suicidal. Those behaviors could affect my own children or other foster children into my home. Safety first. Our foster care question of the week, why might you say no to a placement of a child into your home and into your family? We're looking at some of your responses here. Cropper House says, all of our bio children are grown. However, we would say no if we would hinder the progress of others in the home. We have done this twice already. Jack says that we originally said no girls. We have 4 of our old boys at home, but we have accepted a 17-year-old girl, and she's been a wonderful addition. Our main worries are a history of violence, how serious medical might be. Our 2 babies are drug exposed in utero and have lots of appointments already. I understand. Nina says, we expected a younger child with a history of setting fires and break-ins. We discovered the break-ins were to find food and to be in a safe place. We kept fire starters away from him and kept a close eye on him and kept them busy after school. He adopted very well. Good to hear that, Nina. That is good to hear. Tish said, I have said no to big sibling groups with too many behavioral issues and no to many medical problems that I didn't feel comfortable with. Tish, you're absolutely right. If you don't feel comfortable with taking care of some of the medical problems, then just don't do it. Because you're not only not helping the child, you're placing undue stress and pressure on all the people in your home. There's another family out there who can take care of that child, so no worries there. Monique says, as Mo said, a history of violence, sexual aggression. But if they had needs we couldn't meet. We take teens, but severely delayed teens are not a good fit. We have been asked to take nonverbal or non-potty trained and other severe delays. I do not feel we can meet their needs. Also, we turn down placements of young children and trends who would be placed here with their young children. Lucinda says, I have said no to family placements because of the violent history of their mother. I also say no to children older than my own. Lucinda, I hear you there. When my wife and I began foster parenting about 13 years back, we both said we were not going to take any children older than our own. Within a few years, if you're in my book, Fostering Love, you know that we threw that rule out the window. As foster parents, we often throw rules out the window, don't we? Yeah, that's how it is sometimes. All right, Olivia, we'll look at a few more here. Olivia says, being that we have both boys and girls in the home, we are very careful about what type of sexual behaviors they struggle with. We also prefer not to bring in a child with aggression towards peers. Melanie says, I've recently said no to a medically fragile child just because I don't feel equipped and trained enough to take care of them the way they need and deserve the needs to be met. I received a call for a toddler who was in a total body cast. She would have required specialized care as well as a large portion of the backseat of my car where I had to transport her, which would have meant that I would not have had room in my car for other kids and would have needed to arrange for sitters. She just wasn't a good fit for our family. She deserved to be in a home where she is the center of attention. Okay, those are just some of the many, many responses on this week's Foster Care Question of the Week. You can look at more responses and you can put your response there as well. Okay, we had a phone call in from our NFPA News and Notes, actually an email from them saying that they were unable to appear this week, but they will be on next week. So next week, we will have a full report of the National Foster Parent Association, NFPA News and Notes, and we're going to get a complete rundown of what they're doing, as well as talk about the conference coming up in the state of Virginia. Also next week, we have many of the authors of the new book, The Kinship Parenting Toolbox. Looking forward to that interview. All right, I want to thank our wonderful special guest this week, Ashley Rhodes Corder, the author of the book Three Little Words. Make sure you check her out on her website and on Facebook. What a remarkable story she has. I want to thank her once again for being our special guest. You can listen to this radio as well as this program as well as all of the archives of the show on my website. Just go to Dr. John DeGarmo Foster Care, Google it, and on there you'll find, as I said, archives of the show, this episode, and a whole lot more. Tomorrow, Tuesday, as I do every single Tuesday, we have our Foster Care 101 video of the week. It's a short little two or three minute video. This week we're looking at giving your child your unconditional love. I hope you enjoy it. On my website also, you can find this month's blog. You can find, lots of articles, including some brand new exclusive articles found only on my website. Check it out there. And you can sign up for my free newsletter on there as well. You have been listening to the Foster Talk with Dr. John on the Fostering Success USA Radio Network. I'm ready to get off the air. Why? Because I am ready to head out the door with my wife and some of the kids as we go back to Disney World. So, next week, I'll be in the regular studios in the state of Georgia. I hope your week is a blessed one. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for caring for children in need. And thank you for tuning in to Foster Talk with Dr. John. Until next week, my friend, I bid you cheers.
You're listening to Foster Talk with Dr. John DeGarmo, America's only foster care radio program.